Hello, everyone. It's Scott Tipps, and what is today? It's November 7th. I'm in Las Vegas, Nevada, and it's good to be back after the absence from Halloween last week because I wasn't on. So I hope those of you who came on at that time were not offended that I was in transit, but I am back. So we're here for an hour. And because we've started a little bit late, I'll cut right to the chase and let you know that we have a wonderful guest with us tonight. And I hope I do her name justice because she, being Canadian, has a somewhat French Québécois kind of name. But it's Dr. Kate Rayon Bleu. And Kate is a doctor of naturopathic medicine and the author of the book, which is a very important book, by the way, and I really urge everyone listening to get a copy of this. But the book is called Vitamin K2 and the Calcium Paradox. And the subtitle is How a Little Known Vitamin Could Save Your Life. And as I went through the high points of this book in preparation for today's interview with Kate, I realized a lot of the information in there is very, how shall I say, complementary to information that I already had, but that really adds to my knowledge of how calcium works in the body, how a vitamin D works in the body. And even though I take vitamin K2, I think after reading those notes that I really need to be more diligent about taking vitamin K2 or certainly eating vitamin K2 rich foods. Now, Kate is a former faculty member at the Canadian College of Naturopathic Medicine, and she's no stranger to speaking. She speaks across Canada on topics related to natural medicine, and she's also a contributing editor to several health-related publications. We'd love to have her write for Health Freedom News, the National Health Federation publication, and we've invited her to do so, but she's a busy woman. And but if you want to go directly and see her material, go to her website, which I'll give you right now. So if you have a pen handy, write this down, nd.com. So that's www.drkatend.com. And I urge you to get this book and to follow it through. So, Kate, are you there?
I am. Yes. Good afternoon, Scott.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for taking the time to be on the show. I'm really thrilled to have you on, especially after having glanced through those pertinent parts of your book. So I have my own questions, but just so you know, the way this works is on TNS Radio, we also have a chat line, and some of the people, not all of the listeners, but some of the listeners will sometimes ask me questions to relay on to you. Now, to everyone listening, by the way, I'm in an office here in Las Vegas, and you will hear in the background the phone ring from time to time very distantly, but just please bear with me and disregard that. It's not something that should bother us. All right. Well, Kate, maybe I should ask you first, how did you come to be a naturopathic doctor? What interested you in doing that? Because you seem so good at it.
Well, thank you. You know, I always knew that I wanted to study medicine and practice medicine. And I have an older sister who's a medical doctor, conventional medical doctor. And I thought I was going to follow in her footsteps. And the more time I spent in university, then afterwards in the hospitals, the more I realized that that was not the model of medicine that really worked for me. And so through my own health experiences, as well as doing some research, I discovered naturopathic medicine. And of course, here in Ontario, near Toronto, where I live and practice, naturopathic doctors are licensed to be primary care physicians, as they are, I know, in some, but on all states in the U.S. Yeah. And so, you know, between my own health experiences and then, you know, learning more about naturopathic medicine and recognizing it as treating the whole person and the underlying cause of symptoms and working with the body, that really appealed to me, and I've never looked back.
Well, I can understand that, because I have to admit I thought about going into medicine myself, and then I looked at what you had to do it. And it wasn't that I was adverse to the work part, as clearly you aren't, given your workload and what you put out there. But on the other hand, I, like you, didn't care for, you know, that what you really had to do to become an MD, and what you had to give up. I think you made the very sensible approach. I sort of backslid into law instead. And so here I am, sort of a backroom doctor instead. Well, you've written this book. When did this book, Vitamin K2 and the Calcium Paradox, come out?
This year, actually, in January. So it's quite new.
Okay. And you obviously have been researching and studying it for some time. How did you get the idea for the book? Just kind of curious about that.
Well, you know, it's actually a good question, because I sort of discovered or tuned into the emerging research about vitamin K2, maybe back in 2007, in which time, you know, it was still pretty early days, and really it still is. But the more I learned about vitamin K2 and its importance in our health, and just how much research was already out there, but the fact that nobody was talking about it when it's arguably as important as vitamin D, about which we hear so much, you know, I thought, oh, well, no, you know, somebody's going to be writing a book on this anytime. And I kept waiting and waiting, and 1 year went by and another, and I realized nobody was talking about it and writing about it. And then it occurred to me that that person had to be me. And so that's what really led me to pull all that research and information together and then kind of fill out the story with the history of this nutrient and how it came to be overlooked, and pull it together with more, you know, historical evidence and modern research to present, you know, this package of information for people who are looking to improve their own health or need to fill in that missing piece of the puzzle about so many health conditions.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I have to say, I'm so appreciative of you that you've done that. But whenever I see this, and this may sound a little funny, but when I see vitamin K2, it always begs the question in my mind, there must be other forms of vitamin K. And are there, in fact, other forms of vitamin K?
There are. There are two main forms of vitamin K, K1 and K2, which keeps things simple. It's not as complex as, say, the B vitamins. We've just got these two main forms. Mm-hmm. But because of these two forms, that's the reason why this particular nutrient was overlooked for so long. So most people, when they hear vitamin K, when they say vitamin K, they're referring to vitamin K1. And this is, of course, found in green leafy vegetables. And the main purpose of vitamin K1 is in blood clotting, which is very important. But we always have enough of that nutrient in our bodies. Hmm. It's the K2 that can often be lacking. And its role absolutely is not in blood clotting. It has entirely different roles in our health.
Hmm. Okay. Well, thank you. So that really helps clarify it, because that is something that I think I missed early on, and it's something that I really needed to pay more attention to. So let me just ask you this then. So what does vitamin K2 do in the body? You kind of explained what K1 does. So what about K2?
Yeah, vitamin K2 essentially moves calcium around the body. So it will direct calcium into your bones and teeth where you want it to be. And even more importantly, it will draw calcium out of places where it's not supposed to be. So soft tissue, arteries, those that can be the coronary artery, any artery in the body, as well as other areas of soft tissue where we don't want calcium. So this is very important, because you know, osteoporosis and heart disease are two major health concerns, and here is a system that the body has to keep calcium in its place by keeping our bones strong and our arteries clear. But we need this very important nutrient, vitamin K2, in order to achieve that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, in that sense, then, when we've achieved that, one of the things I had learned years ago, and actually I still talk about, is the fact that calcium and magnesium are twin minerals, and that magnesium is sort of the traffic cop that directs the calcium where to go. But it sounds like K2 is either the real traffic cop or works with magnesium in some way. Do you have any feeling about that?
Yes, I do. And that is, you know, I did write a little bit about magnesium at the very end of the book, because, of course, you can't discuss calcium without discussing magnesium. And the actions of vitamin K2 and magnesium are quite complementary. Mm. So, you know, magnesium, for example, will lower blood pressure, which is essential for good cardiovascular health and avoiding heart attacks, whereas K2 will actually remove the plaque that's in the arteries. So those two, you know, actions complement one another. And there's a number of other ways in which the actions of magnesium and vitamin K2 are complementary.
Okay. Well, then if vitamin K2 is so important, how was it overlooked for so long? Or is that what you had answered before about the people were focused on vitamin K1?
Well, yeah, that's essentially it. I mean, because of these two different forms of the nutrient, there was essentially a case of mistaken identity. So when vitamin K or the K group of vitamins, these two forms were discovered, all of the focus was put on vitamin K1 because, of course, blood clotting is very important, and it was the first one to be identified. And researchers at the time, this is back in the 1930s, saw that there was another form of vitamin K, this K2, and they made the assumption that, oh, you know, K1, K2, same thing. It's just another blood clotting vitamin that we've always have in our body. And that is why it was overlooked for almost 70 years. Really, for all that time, researchers assumed that K2 was a blood clotting vitamin, that, you know, it was easy to get in the diet. And it wasn't not until really in the last decade that we recognized the fact that vitamin K2 does not participate in blood clotting. It, in fact, you know, moves calcium around the body, and that it is not found in green leafy vegetables, not quite as easy to get from your diet. Right. And many people now, studies show, are in fact deficient in vitamin K2. And this is increasing our rates of osteoporosis, heart disease, and a number of types of cancer.
Well, I had, you know, in preparation for this, I had actually done a little research, believe it or not, and I, of course, don't know nearly a fraction of what you know on the subject, but I was intrigued by the fact that supposedly, and please correct me if I'm wrong, the richest natural source was foie gras.
Yes, absolutely. And that's kind of surprising. I would say that's the second richest natural source, but probably the highest source in the Western diet and the European diet is, yes, foie gras, which, right, you know, for so long would be, have been considered a, an unheart healthy luxury food. And yet it fits in perfectly with the supposed French paradox. So how can the French eat rich foods like foie gras and brie cheese and, you know, creamy sauces? Well, it turns out that those foods are very high in vitamin K2, the one nutrient that will simply keep your arteries clear. So it really wasn't a paradox for the French. They're just, you know, happily stuffing themselves with delicious gourmet foods that will clean out your arteries.
Well, one of our listeners is asking about doses, too. For a typical person, man or woman, how much K2 should they be taking?
That's a good question. And in terms of optimal doses, those are just being established, because any recommendations you would see for vitamin K intake is usually based on K1 from green leafy vegetables. But we need to focus on vitamin K2 that might be lacking. So when we talk about doses, often people are already thinking in terms of supplements. So we can address that as well as food intake. But the most recent research shows that about 200 micrograms, 180 is the technical line so far, but let's say about 200 micrograms. That's slightly higher than I recommend in the book, because this is based on very, very recent information. But that should be enough to activate all of the K2 pendant teams, move calcium around your body to where it should be, and help keep cancer in check. So from what we can see right now, for the average person, 200 micrograms. Now, there's a number of conditions, diabetes, cancer, heart disease, osteoporosis, and the list goes on, in which you might want to be taking more, so more than 200. Mm-hmm. And if we look at individuals, individuals in an optimal ratio between these different nutrients. And that is one that sounds reasonable. And as you know, I've got a whole chapter in the book devoted to the relationship between vitamins D, K2, and A, those three, that, you know, the three together. Now, when you say 1,000 micrograms or even 1,000 milligrams, micrograms, yeah, because we have to talk about what form of vitamin K. When you look at vitamin K2 supplements, they actually come in two different forms, and depending on which type you're taking makes a big difference in the dosage you need to take. So for people who are shopping for vitamin K2 supplements, you'll find two different kinds on the shelves. You have to look at the small print often. One says menaquinone 4 or MK4, and this is considered to be a synthetic form of vitamin K2. Lots of studies done with this form of K2, and the dosage that's typically used in the studies is 45 milligrams per day. That would be 45,000 micrograms.
Right.
The other form of vitamin K2 that you'll find in supplements, and that's the one I tend to lean towards, is called MK7 or menaquinone 7. This is a naturally derived from bacterial synthesis. And this is the one, when I talk about microgram doses, usually that's the one that's used in, you know, 200 micrograms would be a standard dose of that MK7 form.
I see. Okay, well, I'm going to have to check, because the version I prefer to take was the Carlson brand K2, and I have to confess, I don't know if it's the MK4 or the MK7, and they sell it in the 5-milligram capsules at a fairly reasonable price. And so I will have to look that up at some point, maybe even during the show, and see.
Yeah, I'll have to look it up, too, because I don't know off the top of my head for that brand what type they're using.
Okay, yeah, it would be interesting, but I'm glad you broke that down for me, because that's always been confusing to me, the MK4 versus the MK7, and I never had the time or took the time to look into it further. But one of our guests is saying, well, when you take this vitamin, one of our listeners, sorry, when you take this vitamin K2, is it better to take it orally or rub it onto like the soft side of your skin somewhere and get it absorbed into the body?
No, it's definitely best to take it orally, and that's how we would traditionally have gotten this through vitamin K2-rich foods, you know, the foie gras you mentioned before, for example, and the body is definitely designed to absorb it very efficiently with an oral dosage.
Okay. Well, now someone's saying that between you and me that the sound is cutting out, and I'm wondering if we should call you to be able to make sure. I'm not sure if it's the Skype or what.
The sound is fine now, Scott. It was Skype went off there earlier. It's okay now, though.
Okay. All right. So we're fine now. All right. Thank you, Ben, for that. I appreciate it, because I just soon go on like this, since it seems to be working fine for me. But far be it for me to say otherwise. Okay, so back to the vitamin K2. With the vitamin K2, you know, in your book, you've written some very interesting things, and if I could kind of take you through the highlights, because I think I don't want to give away the book. People should buy your book, and I assume they can get it through Amazon.com, is that right?
Yes, definitely.
Okay, and also, could they order it through your website?
My website does have a link to the Amazon.
Okay, but they can just go directly to Amazon if they. But let me just say for the listeners who came on later, please go to Dr. Kate Rayon-Bleu's website, which is www.drkatend.com. Dr. Kate. nd.com. You can see a lot of information about her, and you can see further more information on this than we'll even have a chance to cover this hour. But I definitely recommend that you buy this book. One of the things that's intrigued me about the book is some of what you have had to say on the subject of vitamin K2 and osteoporosis. And it seems like this is the key to help women who have at least are at risk for osteoporosis to prevent it or even to reverse it. Is that right?
It is very important. And for individuals who have been suffering with osteoporosis, osteopenia, struggling with their bone density or bone health for a long time, despite seemingly doing all the right things, this is really an important missing piece to that treatment puzzle. Because again, you know, studies have shown, and it's very clear that the mechanism of action of vitamin K2 is to direct calcium into bones and keep it there. And bones even do secrete a protein to allow vitamin K2 to do that. But that protein is essentially useless until vitamin K2 comes on the scene. So there have been, you know, clinical trials that have come out, well, some of which I mentioned in the book and some that have been published even since the book has come out very recently this summer to show the benefits of vitamin K2 on bone health, not just bone density. And that's something important to keep in mind is that for so long we focused everything about osteoporosis and bone health has been on bone density, but there are other aspects to your bone microarchitecture and your history of falls and fractures, and there are other elements to bone health that will help you prevent fractures. So vitamin K2 has been shown to be very important to prevent hip fractures and bone fractures.
Hmm. And for those who are vegetarians, is there a good vegetarian source of vitamin K2?
There are lots of good vegetarian sources. The vegan sources are harder to come by, but it just so happens that for vegetarians and vegans, the highest food, single highest, the only one that's above foie gras, in vitamin K2 is a vegetable or a plant-based food, which is natto. That's N-A-T-T-O. Uh-huh. That's a Japanese fermented soybean food. Uh-huh. And this is eaten as a breakfast food in some areas of Japan. And studies have shown that the people in those areas who eat the natto have higher levels of vitamin K2, higher bone density, lower rates of osteoporosis, much less hip fractures, far fewer hip fractures, and far better heart health. So it really does make a difference with those things. And natto, well, I do write all about adventures of trying to find it and learning to eat it because it's an acquired taste, to say the least. But it is certainly one that vegetarians and vegans can use to increase their K2 intake.
Okay. Well, in that sense, and we've been talking about osteoporosis, since it's working on calcium, does it also have an effect on fluoride? Because a lot of the people, including our listeners in Ireland, they're drinking, and the U.S., they're drinking fluoridated water. And I was just wondering if it would have some sort of protective effect, K2, against fluoride.
Well, K2 certainly has a beneficial effect on the teeth and dental health. I didn't come across very much information yet or research about the direct interactions between fluoride and K2, but certainly K2 is very important for boosting dental health, preventing and treating even cavities in both children and adults. And of course, we know one of the side effects of fluorosis or excessive fluoridation is ironically a weakening of the teeth that leads to more cavities. And K2 certainly will help to strengthen teeth and prevent and treat dental cavities.
I remember you mentioning that in your book, and I was very intrigued by that. My own teeth are very strong because I take magnesium and vitamin D and boron, but I have to admit, and as I said at the start of the show, that I've been not so good at taking vitamin K2, but that's definitely going to change after this program. I've been better, but now I'll be, you know, even better than before about it, because I noticed from your material that it not only works on that, but it helps prevent heart attacks, heart disease, because as we all know, it's not really about cholesterol, it's about calcification of the arteries.
That's right. You know, whether cholesterol is high or low, what really matters is do you have plaque building up in your arteries? And many different types of studies, from population-based studies to animal studies looking at the development of the plaque in the arteries to human clinical trials, have shown that K2 can prevent and even reverse the existence of plaque. And that sounds incredible, because we tend to think of heart disease or plaque as something that, you know, sneaks up on us. They call it, you know, the silent killer. But the fact is that the body has always had ways of dealing with calcium and making sure it is in the appropriate places within the body. And it just needs certain nutrients to do that, and vitamin K2 is a main one. So when we take vitamin K2, our body activates special proteins that literally goes and scavenge, they'll scavenge calcium, find it, and remove it from the arteries.
That's actually very proactive, much more than I'd ever thought. And so you would recommend that anyone with heart disease in their family or anyone in general take vitamin K2 as preventative, right?
Definitely. And, you know, given the fact that heart disease is the leading killer of both men and women in North America and really in the Western world at this point, K2 is very, very important for that, preventing and even treating existing calcification in the arteries.
Now, what about those women, Kate, who take these calcium supplements? You know, they're just calcium, doesn't have magnesium or K2 or anything else in them. Are they helping or hurting their health?
Well, that really was the jumping off point for the book, are all the studies that are coming out now showing that people who take calcium, and specifically the studies are being done on women, because women, we tend to take more calcium supplements, that women who take calcium supplements are at a much greater risk, 20 to 30% more heart attacks and strokes than those who don't. And, you know, we know even a doctor who won't recommend a multivitamin will tell their patients to take a calcium supplement for the strength of their bones. Most now are also recommending vitamin D, but very few recommend even magnesium to go along with that. And certainly nobody is suggesting K2. And, you know, the question here is not, should we or shouldn't be taking calcium, or is calcium dangerous? But how can the body safely utilize calcium? Right. And so that is important. You may want to revisit the need for vitamin K2 supplements and the benefit, the need for calcium supplements and the benefit you can derive from them. But we certainly know that vitamin K2 will help you benefit from calcium, whether it's in your supplement form or from your diet.
Okay, so I would gather that, and I have a little bit of a head start over our listeners on this, but your book isn't really just for people who take calcium supplements then. It's really about, it seems to be like a whole health, a health book in many respects on all sorts of different issues, right?
Definitely. I mean, certainly the people who are taking calcium supplements for whatever reason definitely need to understand the information in my book about vitamin K2. But anybody who has concerns about heart health, whether or not their cholesterol is high or low, whether or not they know if they have, say, plaque building up, a lot of very important information for people who have concerns around cancer, diabetes, children's health. If one thing comes out of this book, I hope it's the understanding of the importance of vitamin K2 for women who are trying to conceive, and boost fertility in men and women, as well as throughout pregnancy for healthy development in the child, and then throughout childhood and adolescence for strong bones and teeth and a number of other health concerns. It really does span the whole life, from childhood to old age when we're more concerned about heart and bone health, but as well as diabetes and arthritis and so many health conditions. I was astonished about the amount of research that already existed on vitamin K2.
That's interesting, though, about what you were saying about boosting fertility as well. I really never had an inkling of an idea that it would do that. What's the mechanism by which it does that? Do you know?
Yeah, actually, it's kind of a neat mechanism. It's specifically with regards to male fertility. We know that osteocalcin, it's actually the same protein that helps boost bone density, mm-hmm. will stimulate sperm production and testosterone production on the level of the testes. And so this osteocalcin is a vitamin K2 dependent protein. We need vitamin K2 in order for this protein to work. And so that's the basis on which K2 helps boost fertility. And certainly we've seen a lot of traditional cultures that would encourage K2-rich foods before marriage, or when people were planning on, young people were planning on getting married. And there's a logic behind that traditional wisdom.
Mm. Okay, well, because you always hear about L-arginine and, of course, vitamin E and those sort of things, but I'd never, ever heard of vitamin K2, so it's good to add that to the repertoire and to have that available. The other thing that I noticed in your book was that the extreme difference between those taking a high dietary intake of K2 living, how much longer is it on average than those who are deficient? It was like some incredible number of years longer that the...
That's right. 7 was the average lifespan, increase in lifespan. And huge differences for the people with the highest K2 intake compared to those with the lowest. Huge differences in cardiovascular disease, lung cancer, prostate cancer. Of course, those are two big, cancer killers of men. And a number of other health concerns.
Hmm. Now, there are some of the people that I've had ask me questions in previous programs have dealt with issues such as ME or chronic fatigue syndrome, those kind of things. Do you think K2 would have an effect on that? Would it help them?
Well, I would not have necessarily said yes to that right away because of not encountering any research on it. Mm. And yet I've been contacted by a number of people since reading my book and taking vitamin K2 to say they've had remarkable benefits on that level. Mm. And so at this point, I can say I've had some good anecdotal evidence and good case histories, people reporting back to me that K2 has helped them with those concerns, and that's something that needs to be investigated further.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's fair enough. And it makes sense, too, because the thing that made me think about it, Kate, actually was in your book you talk about Dr. Weston Price and his discovery of that new fat-soluble nutrient that he called Activator X, which, as you pointed out very aptly, that we now know is vitamin K2. And it seemed like it was being used, his Activator X factor, was being used for people who suffered from physical decline in general. And I just, pretty much added 2 and 2 together. Perhaps I came up with 5, but it seemed like it might be applicable for people with those kind of conditions, or who knows, maybe even autism or something of that sort. But it's clear that I need to go through your book more fully and really see how it all plays out. But that's why I have you here on the line today, because now I get to ask you the questions myself. I'm being very selfish here, but let me see if anyone else has any questions. So I'll go to the chat.
Yeah, I'm trying to follow the chat line here, and for some reason I can only see part of it, but there seems to be very interesting discussions about grass-fed foods and eggs raw or cooked, so maybe you can pass along some of the questions that are popping up. I can only see part of them.
I will, and they do get intermingled with the general comments, so I want to repeat for the listeners that if you have a particularly important question, do please put them in all caps so they stand out from the rest. And let me see real briefly here, because some people are talking about zinc and popcorn and raw eggs. Do you get vitamin K2 from eggs?
Egg yolks. How the chickens or hens are raised makes a big difference in the amount of K2. Okay. Any egg will have some, but grass-fed eggs, the lovely orange yolks, those are very high in vitamin K2. So egg yolks, yes, And also I would agree with comments made here about they should be soft, either the yolk should be, you know, raw or soft boiled, not hard cooked. You'll get the better
source from it. Well, you know, what's so funny is all the typical modern day medical advice or nutritional advice is, you know, doctors advising patients to avoid heart attacks by just eating the egg whites and not the egg yolks. And it seems like they're giving them the exact opposite, 180 degree opposite advice, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. You know, the egg comes with two parts, and I think we're meant to eat both of those parts. And in particular, the whole idea of, you know, that the egg white omelet was heart healthy was just so backwards, because all of the beneficial nutrients, at least in terms of heart health, are found in the yolk.
Okay. And one of our listeners is asking what you think of, and I don't know what this is, maybe it'll mean something to you, ASEA. I don't know. It sounds like the Asian Society of Eating, whatever. But do you know what ASEA is?
ASEA. It doesn't ring a bell, no.
Okay. Well, they say it's redox modules, but I don't know what it is either. So I'll go to the next question. Have any studies suggested that iodine and vitamin K2, it's a little funny question here, but if they're combined, yeah, well, do they combine well or complement each other in any way?
I have come across a lot of research on the complementarity of iodine and K2. I have to think about that one in terms of the different their actions in the body and the mechanisms.
Well, let me ask you then something else. And other people keep referring to the beneficial effects of vitamin K2 with the pineal gland. Have you found anything like that in your research to be true?
You know, certainly that was a focus of Price's research, because when we talk about pineal gland, fertility comes into mind, you know, the effect of the pineal gland on the reproductive organs, and that is where vitamin E, for example, plays a very big role in boosting fertility and reproductive health. Mm-hmm. And being a fat-soluble vitamin, there are relationships between, say, K2 and E. Mm-hmm. And the sort of role of K2 in the brain is an area where we know very little at this point, but it's one I think that is sort of stands or is up and coming to be the next closely researched area.
Okay. Well, is there, say someone's on medications like statin drugs or the like, is there any contraindication for taking vitamin K2?
No, there's no contraindications, actually. First of all, vitamin K2 has no toxic effect. That's very important to note. No toxicity, unlike other fat-soluble vitamins where there is potential for toxicity. Vitamin K2 is very safe. Mm-hmm. And there's also no drug interaction, with the exception of warfarin. Warfarin is, a vitamin K2 a vitamin K-dependent blood thinner. So it's a type of blood thinner that interferes with the vitamin K metabolism in the body. Now, yeah. I do specifically have a section in the book for people who are on warfarin of information they need to know about how vitamin K2 can actually, in small amounts, help that drug work more safely and more effectively. Mm-hmm. But they need to speak to their doctor about that, and it helps them, helps that drug work more predictably. But other than that, other than warfarin, mm-hmm. there's no contraindication with medicine. So no other, other types of blood thinners, Plavix, aspirin, anything like that, heart medications, they're all fine with K2.
Mm, okay. Well, I thought that was a good question that one of our listeners asked, because it is something that does occur with other vitamins, as you pointed out, and yet it's comforting to know that that it doesn't happen here. And indeed, it sounds like there's a huge safety range with vitamin K2 that one really doesn't have to be too worried about getting too much, maybe too little actually, but not too much.
That's right. Definitely concerns around too little. A lot of studies show a widespread deficiency, but also many investigations have shown that it's very safe. And that's because vitamin K2 will activate K2 proteins. And once they're all activated, then if you take excess amounts of vitamin K, it just has no other action in the body. And so it's done its job and it can't harm you. Whereas there are potential for toxicity with vitamins A and D because they actually act like hormones and affect our DNA, whereas vitamin K2 works differently.
Hmm. Is this something that you need to take regularly, though, or does the vitamin K2 go out of the blood or out of the body rapidly?
It does, actually. Now, this is a big difference between vitamin K1 and K2. So vitamin K1, the blood clotting vitamin, the body has a specific way of recycling that. So you always have enough for your blood to clot properly. So deficiency is rare on that end, which is why we took vitamin K for granted for so long. In fact, vitamin K2, we do need to take it in every day. And studies have shown that if you are deficient or lacking in vitamin K2 after 7 days, you will start to suffer some of the side effects, or not all of your K2 dependent proteins will be activated, which means you're quietly starting to lose bone density or quietly beginning to build up plaque and having other health concerns. So it is definitely something we need to have in our diet on a regular basis.
Okay. All right. You know, I want to mention to the listeners again, because it is such an important book. I want to, for those of you who came onto the program late, we're talking again with, out of Toronto, Canada, we're talking with Dr. Kate Rayon-Bleu, and she's a naturopathic doctor, has been for a very long time, and has written this wonderful book called Vitamin K2 and the Calcium Paradox, How a Little Known Vitamin Could Save Your Life. And I highly, highly recommend it. Get it through Amazon.com if you don't already own a copy, and recommend it to your friends and family, or when you get a copy of the book, share it around. But this is the sort of book that we like to have in our magazine at the National Health Federation under a book review, because it is something that's so critical. And I've noticed, Kate, at the Codex meetings when we discuss these various nutrients, vitamin K is really an orphan nutrient. It's not considered, it's not discussed at all. And if it is, it's just the way that you indicated, which is people are thinking about vitamin K1 and suffering from the same confusion that, quite frankly, I had at the start of this program. And so this is something, actually, I may want to consult with you later for NHF's position at Codex meetings on vitamin and mineral supplements, if you wouldn't mind.
I'd be happy to do that, because there, you know, this confusion around the difference between K1 and K2 has gone on for so long, in part because of the way the nutrients were discovered, but it persists. You know, you see people, there's more talk about vitamin K, and you see articles saying, oh, you know, eat green leafy vegetables for good bone health because of your vitamin K. Well, green leafy vegetables are certainly good for you, and they are sources of vitamin K1, but studies have shown vitamin K1, you know, doesn't help your bone health. So there's still a lot of confusion around this nutrient that people need to understand the differences between those two types of this vitamin.
So when you take K2, should you take it with a meal or between meals, or does it matter?
It is fat soluble, so it's best if you can take it with a meal, because you typically will have some fat in that meal and that helps you absorb it. Or you can look for it in a soft gel form or a liquid form that happens to be in a, you know, an oil-based formula. Then you can take that with or without food.
Okay.
I also saw a question up about dosages for children.
Yes, I was about to go to that. So
okay, good. Yeah, I saw that one.
No, go ahead.
So as I mentioned before, there is no toxicity associated with the vitamin K2, and kids absolutely do need it for the bone health and dental health. And because their skeletons are growing, you know, typically with children, we think because they're smaller bodies, they need less. But in this sense, yes, their bodies are smaller, but their bodies are also growing. Their bones are growing, and their teeth need to be protected from cavities. We know kids and adolescents tend to get more cavities. cavities, and that's actually because their bodies are growing. Mm. And so I've been giving my my older boy, since he was since he could swallow or chew the little capsules, 120 micrograms per day, with some vitamin D with that, and now he's seven. I still give him that dosage per day. Probably once he hits adolescence, I'll double that up, because when kids hit puberty and the skeleton starts to grow, then they need even more vitamin K2. Studies have shown that adolescents are one of the most vitamin K2 deficient groups, mm-hmm. along with menopausal women. So 120 micrograms a day for kids from the time they can take it, whether that's, you know, when breastfeeding stops a year or whenever that happens to be, and throughout childhood.
Okay, so that sounds good. Now, is there a difference in amounts for, say, menstruating women and regular, I mean, mature men? Is there a difference between men and women at those
Like iron, for example? Well, we know when women hit menopause and estrogen levels decline, that can negatively affect bone health in at least three different ways. And vitamin K2 has been shown to counteract that. So certainly when women are approaching menopause, vitamin K2 requirements do go up and should be increased. So, you know, at least 200 micrograms, or that's when you might want to start thinking about doubling your vitamin K2 intake from food or supplements.
Okay. All right. Well, that's good, because I'm thinking in terms of my own mother and what she should be taking and the like. And so, all right, we have someone has a question about your viewpoint on Codex Alimentarius. And what do you think of Codex Alimentarius? And I don't know the full extent of the question, but I guess
that's certainly something we could discuss for the whole show. And it's a little scary the way it threatens, the freedom of our access to supplements and natural health products.
Yeah, I mean, it is, you are absolutely right. We could spend a whole show, multiple shows on this subject. And, you know, the National Health Federation has been fighting this battle at Codex since about 1996 or 97, when we first sent reporters to the Codex meeting. And then I started attending in the year 2000 with the first meeting in June 2000 in Berlin. And have been going to multiple Codex meetings ever since. And we have one coming up, in fact, that would interest you, Kate, which is the one next month in Germany, in Bad Soden, Germany, which will deal with the establishment of the nutrient reference values, you know, the RDAs, for various various supplements. And to be honest with you, as I sit here, I don't recall if they're establishing one for vitamin K. I actually don't think they are. I think they're ignoring it. But if they are, then all of your comments actually, and your book particularly, are very pertinent to what we would discuss there at the meeting, the NHF delegation, and what we would argue at the meeting. And the funny thing is that NHF was responsible over 3 years ago, well, 3 years ago this month, for stopping the continuation towards adoption of these standards that would have dumbed down the levels of the vitamins from, like, in the case of vitamin C, 60 milligrams down to 45 milligrams, and in the case of all the B-complex vitamins except for folate, down by about 10-20%, as well as vitamin A down and some others. Interestingly enough, fluoride was being left at a high level. And interestingly enough for you, Kate, is that calcium was being raised while magnesium was being lowered, the exact opposite of what one would think. So, but it is interesting that you mentioned, you know, that we're having this discussion about K2 just a bare month before this meeting, because it is something that perhaps it should be raised there. I'm just afraid that if any number is established, it will be established too low. So we might want to, just thinking ahead here, see how it goes with the other nutrients and then decide, if they aren't discussing vitamin K, whether it makes sense to even raise the subject with these people, because most of them are highly uneducated on the real needs of nutrients. You would be like the one-eyed giant in the land of blind men and women there with your nutritional knowledge.
So, well, you know, when I talk in chapter 4 of my book about vitamin K2 being an anti-aging nutrient, and I preface that discussion with a talk about the triage theory of aging, which is essentially the triage theory of how our body uses nutrients, and that, you know, it's pretty easy to understand. And based on that, it's easy to understand that we really have been taking the wrong approach to setting RDAs, mm-hmm. because we're only looking at, you know, our immediate needs of what will prevent a deficiency today. And as you know, looking at what will prevent scurvy is not the optimal way to set a need for our vitamin C intake.
Yeah.
And the same thing applies to vitamin K2, you know, looking at what meets our needs today. When this is a nutrient that, you know, we can be deficient today, we can maybe even deficient for 5 or 10 years and not notice, but gradually your bone density is declining or plaque is building up. And that's why we call these things the silent killers, because they can go unnoticed for so long. And so we need to keep that long-term health in consideration of these things.
I totally agree with you. And, you know, it's funny you say that, because that's the argument that NHF has been making at these particular nutrition committee meetings of Codex over the last several years, actually many years. You know, I really thank you for that, Kate, for bringing me back to that, because you've given me an idea on the paper that we're about to submit to the Codex meeting that'll be read by all the 300 some odd delegates who will be there, and that state our position, because ours is the most, I hate to say radical position, but certainly the most aggressive position on in terms of wanting to have a nutrient-dense diet and to have, you know, look at towards optimal health, like you were saying, as opposed to just the needs of the day. And so that's something that comes up. Well, we're nearing the end of the time. Let me see if anyone has any questions. If they don't, is there something, Kate, that I have not that you'd like to tell our listeners that maybe I overlooked or didn't think about or would be pertinent for their information, for their knowledge?
Well, there's a lot of information in the book, as you know, but I think that we've done a pretty good job at sort of, you know, you're touching on many different areas. I guess for me, the important take-home message is that the story of vitamin K2 is so much more than the story of a nutrient or even of nutrition, because it really represents, it's, you know, the poster child of what's been lost to industrialization of our food and factory farming and what can be gained through, you know, in terms of our nutrition and our overall health by getting back to the old fashioned ways of farming and producing our foods and eating and nutrient dense foods.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense. And in that respect, do you do personal consultations? If someone who is listening wanted to consult with you on an individual basis, do you do that?
Well, I am happy to answer questions if people want to contact me through my website, although right now technically I am on maternity leave because I have a new baby, I'm not doing it, seeing patients, thank you, or doing consultations, right, per se.
But after a certain period, you will, I assume, redo that.
Sure, yes. Yeah.
Okay. Well, it's been absolutely wonderful to have you on the program. We just had someone throw in a question at the last minute. Will vitamin K2 help with endometriosis?
Well, with endometriosis, it's something I tend to look more at hormones and balancing hormones. And I haven't used it yet for treating K2 for in a treatment protocol with endometriosis, so I can't answer that directly.
Okay. Well, thank you for that. And really, thank you again for being on the air. And let me just tell the listeners that next week, November 14th, I don't know why I'm saying 17th, November 14th, we will have Dr. Tom O'Brien on, who will discuss gluten. He's a gluten expert, and we will have him on. But for the moment, we've been with Kate Royaume-Bleu, and I know I'm butchering your name.
No, that's good.
But in any event, in Toronto, Canada, and you have been absolutely magnificent, Kate, and I highly recommend to all of our listeners that you go out today. You don't have to go out. Go online today and order her book about vitamin K2 and the calcium paradox, And, you know, one thing I forgot, and let me just throw it in there. Why your title says the calcium paradox. What is the paradox, Kate?
Well, it's really the situation in which we need calcium in the body, but we need it to be in the right places. And if calcium's in the wrong places, it can actually kill us. So vitamin K2 is all about taking the paradox out of calcium and helping the body put it into where it's supposed to be.
Thank you. And with those noble words, and I couldn't have summed it up better, just in any way, I want to thank you, Kate, and we will now sign off and turn over the program to Sean McGuire. Stay tuned for him. He's always magnificent. And Kate, again, you've been marvelous, and thank you for appearing on our program today.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. Thanks for spreading the word about vitamin K2.
Thank you. All right. Bye for now.